Now on Racing Pulse, RSN's racing editor, Matt Stewart.
They had to protect the Melbourne Cup. Who's to say the punters will continue to have faith that the Cox Plate could be run with a vaxxed crowd?
For more news, opinion and selections, head to rsn.net.au.
It is time to have a chat now to RSN's racing editor, Matty Stewart. Matty, a heap of news, and we heard... The passion and also the dismay, despair, frustration in the voice of Glenn Boss before when he was talking about this COVID situation. A lot of SMS replies saying that we love you, Bossy, you call it as it is, Bossy. Never afraid to say your have your views. Glenn Boss, absolutely spot on. How refreshing to hear a well-known person talking about this. Well said, Bossy. Everyone's fraying around the edges at the moment in regards to this, and I think everyone's looking for some light at the end of the tunnel. Is there some news from Racing Victoria and the individual clubs that we may see some pretty big announcements in regards to vaccinations and the hope of getting people back to the crowds, Matty?
Yeah, there's sort of two parts of the story. The first one is the state government roadmap, which they're going to release next week regarding what can happen when we get to 70% full vaccinations and 80% one jab. And I was having a good chat to Michael Brown today about the urgency that racing becomes part of that roadmap, that when they get to that point, that this will trigger not a vax-only crowd. The emphasis with Moonee Valley now isn't vax-only. It is just that racing is factored in when the government says 70% full, 80% partial. And Michael Brown says that is looking like it's going to just about dead heat around Cox Plate time, that we're part of that roadmap. And then when various lockdown scenarios are opened up, that racing is part of that. And then we can get a crowd of about 5,000 at the Cox Plate. So they've shifted a little bit away from vax only. I know that that's the MRC's position at the moment, but Moonee Valley's basically just saying when the roadmap is published by the state government, we want to be factored in and not down the bottom of the pile. So he's just saying, and he's saying to Racing Victoria and to all the other clubs, let's just make sure that we are part of the roadmap story from the state government and that we're not bumped down the list and that we're a high priority. And then with this race against time to get crowds back for races like the Cox Plate and then Cup Week and then even the Caulfield Cup before that, that because what Michael Brown said is the previous estimations were a little bit redundant because the vaccination rates are actually going a lot quicker than thought. And those vital 2 weeks or 1 week or whatever it is between, say, Caulfield Cup, Cox Plate and Derby Day, those days are absolutely precious because these are the days of these carnivals. So if the vaccination rates are going up, then Michael Brown's gone from hopeful to confident that there will be some sort of a crowd for the Cox Plate, but that there is a united front from racing, that we are on that roadmap in the mindset of the state government when they... Because racing had always sort of slid down the list a little bit. You might remember with general sporting crowds and so on, that racing was almost treated as an oddity to those things. So they want to make sure of that. And Racing Victoria has also canvassed... there was a poll, a survey of participants last week regarding... A, how many of you are vaccinated? And B, how do you feel about there might be a position that we establish where if you're not vaccinated, you can't compete. So that detail is being sorted out by Racing Victoria and they'll have an announcement in the next couple of days about what the survey reveals and what the message coming out of it will be.
Yeah, it is looking like we're getting further down that road when you see massive organisations like Crown Casino having the no jab, no entry policy. Other concerts are also bringing that in. The Premier has said that they are running that same model in New South Wales. So I wonder what it does mean and whether Racing Victoria will take that next step to say if we're going to have fully vaccinated patrons, crowds, participants must also be fully vaccinated. And from what I'm hearing, the jockeys are all for it. I'm not sure what the Trainers Association stable hands say about that, but that may well be something that does get brought in as we continue to navigate our way through this.
Well, and it will be interesting if there is particularly a prominent participant who, for whatever reason, has a strong anti-vaccination stance. So say if there's a top 15 trainer or a top 15 jockey who, for whatever reason, is dead set against vaccination, what does it mean? What does it mean for their career? So, interesting.
Absolutely.
And we will learn more in the next few days. Jamie Carr's directions hearing was yesterday, and it was kind of an interesting what would you call it, a conundrum presented by her lawyer, Damien Shields, which was, can you tell a lie if you haven't been asked the question that they're accusing you of lying to? And that was about her misinterpretation. She had multiple interviews with stewards regarding who was at the Airbnb party, and it was only on the August 30 interview when the obviously the information that the stewards had mounted about the presence of Mark Zara, where they asked, well, why didn't you tell us Mark Zara was there at the previous two interviews? And Jamie Carr basically said, well, the stewards asked who was something along the lines of who was there at that stage, and her interpretation, according to her lawyer, was, well, I thought you were asking me who was there when the cops turned up, and I just said, well, the cops were there, and me, Ethan, Celine, and Ben, basically. So it's going to come, that's going to be reheard tomorrow. They're going to determine penalty, if there is any, for Jamie Carr on the basis of, did she lie or did she misinterpret the question? So that's what the VRT has to grapple with, and whether they determine whether she's going to be penalised or not.
Okay. There's some interesting arguments being put forward at these hearings. So they'll play out throughout the week. Just on that, what's the latest with those Sydney trainer COVID breach that we were talking about yesterday?
Yeah, I had a really good chat to Mark Van Gestel, the Racing New South Wales chief steward, yesterday about what gravity there might be attached to these breaches from alleged breaches from Craig Carmody and John Thompson, two very prominent Randwick trainers. The situation is that they both reside in LGAs, local government areas that are regarded as basically COVID hotspots, which have heightened lockdown rules and travel rules and all that sort of stuff. Yet they train at Randwick, which is the only LGA that's not regarded as a serious COVID LGA. They're going to work from one LGA to the other, and they have been caught out doing it, and race meetings as well. And Mark Van Gestel said, look, penalty-wise, it has to be determined if these are inadvertent breaches by these two trainers or deliberate breaches. If it's determined that they are deliberate breaches, then they could face very severe sanction. And we know what the template has been down here for COVID breaches and in Canberra with the 3 months to the jockeys. So he did say they were sent emails and there was a lot of communication, whether it was from health officials about LGA movement, and from himself to direct emails to all the trainers, including those two, saying these are the rules and they're very strict, because the situation with Randwick is it's the only metro track that's a safe sanctuary at the moment to race because of the status of that LGA. So Mark Van Gestel said the risk presented is enormous, because it's all about whether Randwick can continue to race or not. So, and Randwick might take the Golden Rose. There's some suggestion that from Mark Van Gestel, monitoring numbers, you know, vaccination rates and the COVID positive rates in Sydney, that if they are at a certain level, there might be some chance that the Golden Rose can actually be run at Rose Hill. He basically said, look, we're a little bit done with Kembla Grange. It's done its job, but we're not really sure that we would rather get back to Randwick or Rose Hill if we can. So we might see less of that push away from town, and hopefully maybe more Randwick, and maybe even a rough chance of Golden Rose might be run at Rose Hill.
It's interesting because we don't get to see public turnover figures, but there was, I was reading on social media that Betfair actually put out some figures about the amount of money that was matched, and Artorias was over $1.7 million in that race, yet it was well and truly down in New South Wales at Kembla Grange. So I don't think there's any doubt that a lot of the punters would prefer to punt on the metropolitan tracks than Kembla Grange on a Saturday. So Racing New South Wales would be feeling those turnover pains as well.
Just a quick one on that too. Like the other options of, say, Scone, Gosford, he said the problem with going to those tracks is that you've got metro contained jockey pools that cannot venture to those areas. Mm-hmm. He said we can't transfer to a couple of the key provincial tracks, because that would mean some of the jockeys would be competing outside of their bubble, which they can't do. So that was another complication.
And just to answer an SMS question from a listener, can regional crowds return earlier here in Victoria because they've opened up? Well, no, Racing Victoria has stated that they will not be allowing crowds back to the tracks in regional Victoria in the current climate. They'll be waiting for further direction from the state government before anything like that occurs. Maddie Raymond, after the biggest win of her career on Saturday, she had a $1 million carrot staring her and the connections in the face, but she made a pretty gutsy and big decision, Maddie.
She did. This is what Maddie had to say when I asked her about it. Was virtually the money or the paddock, and she's chosen the paddock for Chirath.
Oh, look, obviously it is tempting, but it was also a pretty easy decision. The $1 million is only there if you win the Empire Rose. We've got to keep a ticket over another 7 weeks before then, and we've got ourselves a nice horse we want to look after us. You know, we haven't had her out to a mile yet as well, so to know if she even runs out a strong mile is still a little bit questionable. Damien thought she would, and we definitely think in time she will, but I don't want to run the risk deep into a preparation. If we weren't happy with her leading into it, you go in there and run a mile, and you know she's not able to get the job done. You question yourself: was she over it, or can she not run out a mile?
So the question she was answering was about the $1 million bonus for winning the Let's Elope and then the Empire Rose. And I think if you polled 100 people, 95 of them probably would have said, you've got to have a crack. But one thing she did mention also was the seven-week gap between last Saturday and the Empire Rose, that just keeping Chirath ticking over was going to be a really difficult thing to do. So, but what a great thing that she's actually put the filly before the money, which was probably a difficult decision for a lot of people, even people who love their horse, because $1 million bonus is a rare thing. So anyway, so she's in the paddock.
One of the most up-and-coming trainers in the state. She's a horsewoman who puts the horse before any other outside distractions like $1 million. You and I may have made a different decision there.
I know exactly what we would have done. We wouldn't have even thought about it.
Just quickly before we move on, just on a couple of other Spring Carnival pieces of news. Rodrigo Diaz, who was disappointed earlier in the week, I had a text message this morning with Jamie Lovett. I think he was almost third or fourth favourite at one stage for the Melbourne Cup, but after his run over in the UK in the Doncaster Cup, they are now not 100% sure they will come to Australia for the Melbourne Cup. They're going to make a decision in the next 48 hours. They would still like to come. They're just weighing up all options now after that run from Rodrigo Diaz. And Melbourne Cup, Caulfield Cup weights out. I'll throw one to you just before we get to a couple of the other news points. What weight do you think Incentivise will get, and how much did that win cost him on Saturday?
Oh, I'm not much good at these things, but what we were saying the other day, I'll probably stick to that line, is say if his rating says he's about a 53, maybe a kilo and a half. I'm not sure of precedence. So I'm kind of thinking he might end up with about 54 and a half, but I might be completely wrong. What do you reckon?
It'll be fascinating. I'm thinking 54 and a half to 55. We'll see what happens. And he probably would have been on 53 if he hadn't won the Maccabi on Saturday. So it's going to be interesting.
Well, I think
what else is going on?
The lack of international entries. Because in normal circumstances, for him to come through the back blocks of Brisbane and then win a Maccabi Diva, getting up to about 55 seems to be a very high weight off that sort of... But with not many internationals, maybe that's going to be a factor. There's a fascinating story going on in South Australia in the trots that was touched upon last week involving the, in inverted commas, substitution of one stablemate for another in a trots race at Globe Derby on September 4. Let's Get Shorty was, instead of it being Jake Sports Rider, Let's Get Shorty was substituted. And whether it was a deliberate substitution or whether there was some sort of muck-up with the stable or so on, there has been a subsequent stewards report that came out last Friday. Shane Loon, who had five runners that night and had three runners in this race, had originally said that he hadn't been at the meeting and he'd been unwell. And I believe he is unwell, the trainer. But then a subsequent inquiry, he has admitted that he was at the races that night for a brief period. And there's an ongoing inquiry into betting records, whether the substitution was originally inadvertent and then they tried to cover it up once it sort of almost became too late and the wrong horse... they were swapped around as the wrong horses, and the circumstances about what was going on in the half an hour before the race, re-hobbling one and not the other, and all sorts of things that were going on. Potentially, South Australian Police are involved. The horses have been stood down for 28 days. And I'm going to try and have a chat to Graham Locke, the Chief Steward, today, just to get the absolute latest on what's the evidence given by Shane Loon, whether there is a suggestion that the horses were... that it wasn't reported deliberately by the stable and what the circumstances might have been there. So it's a sort of a it's a sexy story in a way because of one horse. The last time I remember was in 1984 at Eagle Farm. So I'm not sure it's quite like fine cotton, but it seems as though there are some weird circumstances going on with a stablemate replacing another in a race. It did run last, by the way.
Gee whiz, all right. We'll read all about that on rsn.net.au, up on the RSN website with all the other news from today. And after the break, Matty, I'm looking forward to opening up the vault. Grant Searle, who's now retired in New Zealand, the trainer of Our Maize K. And you were at your peak back when Our Maize K was spread-eagling the field. So he was a superstar Kiwi, wasn't he?
And he was a bit of a freak, and I think that's why he didn't go on to become a good stallion, was because he was kind of put together backwards, and he was just this accident who became a superstar two-year-old, then three-year-old. I remember he kicked clear of the field in the Golden Slipper and was run down late in a hot edition of the Golden Slipper, and then he went on to win everything, and then it all failed on the Cox Plate. But he was a superstar and just a dead-set definition of a freak. He was a total freak.
Yeah, he was. He didn't cost much as well. We'll tell the Our Maize K story coming up next on The Vault. Matty, read all about it, rsn.net.au.
Thanks, Michael.
Up next, it will be The Vault. Grant Searle and Our Maize K. We'll still, a little later, have a chat to Matty Cartwright, who will be so excited. His first Group 1 ride on Irish Flame in the Sir Rupert Clark on Saturday, and it's Wink's 10th birthday today. We'll check in to see how she's going with part owner Peter Tye. All that still to come on Racing Pulse.